This podcast episode is powered by AfriPods, the world's number one podcasting platform for African stories.
Thanks again, Thomas, for making the call. From an introduction, maybe could you introduce yourself and what you do, and maybe a brief background about the Global Peace Index?
Sure. I'm Thomas Morgan. I'm the Associate Director of Research at the Institute for Economics and Peace, and I'm the Project Manager and Research Lead for the Global Peace Index. Just a little bit about the Global Peace Index. It's the world's leading measure of peacefulness. It measures peace across 163 different countries and covers 99.9% of the world's population. This report this year, the 2023 GPI, is the 17th iteration of the Global Peace Index. So we've been doing this since 2007. So IEP as an organization is dedicated to doing research on quantifying peace and its economic benefits. And the GPI is sort of our flagship report that we put out every year.
Interesting. Looked at the report, and I mean, what stood out for me is that the average level of global peacefulness has deteriorated. I think this is the light consecutive year. From high level perspective, what do you think has been the most significant factor that has led to, has contributed to this trend?
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. It is ninth consecutive year of a deterioration in peacefulness. And the primary drive of that deterioration over the past year has been the increase in conflict deaths. So in 2022, it was actually at the highest number of conflict deaths this century, the highest number of conflict deaths since the end of the Rwandan genocide. So almost 250,000 people were killed in conflict over the past year. Now, of course, much of the media focus internationally has been on the conflict in Ukraine, but actually in terms of the conflict where most people were killed, it was in Ethiopia. So over 100,000 people killed in the conflict in the Tigray region of Ethiopia in 2022, and then around 80,000 people killed in Ukraine. Also significant increases in conflict deaths in Mali as well. So it's a continuation of a trend we've seen over the past few years of rising conflict deaths.
I mean, you've mentioned about the deaths from global conflict, with Ethiopia now surpassing Ukraine in conflict-related deaths. From where you sit, how do these trends reflect, say, the changing dynamics of conflicts worldwide? Are there any key sort of drivers behind the increase in the violence?
Yeah, so the conflict in Ethiopia almost stands alone, in a sense, in that there wasn't a great deal of external involvement, almost total internet blackout. So very, very little information and very little coverage of the conflict as a whole. But if you look at conflicts elsewhere, sort of in Ukraine and in the central Sahel region of Africa, what we're seeing there is an increase in what we call internationalized intrastate conflicts. So more and more you have conflicts that involve internal parties actors or the state of one country an internal actor, but you also increasingly have external actors becoming involved in those conflicts. So in fact, in the latest year of the GPI, you've had, I think it was 89 countries were involved in some form of external conflict. So that's the strongest trend in regards to the type of conflicts that we're seeing.
Interesting. Maybe the other noticeable thing that I noticed from the report is that the economic impact of this violence rose by about 17%, and the total value of that particular economic impact is about $1 trillion, which is very, very significant, equivalent to about 13% of global GDP. I mean, when you look at those figures, I mean, that's such a massive number. From where you sit, how does this escalation in violence affect economic development and social progress globally? And what measures do you think can be taken to mitigate such adverse effects?
Yeah, absolutely. You're absolutely right. So the total economic impact of violence and conflict was $17.5 trillion, $1 trillion increase from the past year. The primary driver of that is increased military expenditure related to the conflict in Ukraine, but there are also increases in military spending in China and Saudi Arabia and Russia. So lots of sort of global and regional superpowers increasing their military spending is what we've seen. However, if you look at across the whole range of 163 GPI countries, you actually see there are many countries reducing their military expenditure, reducing the size of their armed forces. And of course, as you rightly point out, while spending on the military and security service is certainly necessary, there's a considerable trade-off. There's not as much of an economic multiplier, not as much growth that's engendered from military expenditure as opposed to spending on education or health or other areas. Although it may be necessary, it's certainly one of the least productive forms of spending.
Speaking of Ukraine, the country saw the largest deprivation in peacefulness. While on the other hand, I mean, we saw Russia show some improvement in certain indicators despite Russia's involvement in the conflict. I mean, how do we reconcile these contrasting trends? And I mean, what are the broader implications of this war between Ukraine and Russia on global peace and stability?
Yes, I mean, certainly this year, very significant deterioration in peacefulness in Ukraine. Of course, one of the, as you point out, one of the interesting findings there is if you just look at Russia internally, Russia's actually been improving on a number of indicators. So decreased levels of homicide, decreased levels of violent demonstrations, and so on. But then, of course, Russia's external actions with the invasion of Ukraine have led to that significant deterioration in peacefulness. And I think that the thing to point about the conflict in Ukraine, the effects are really being felt worldwide. So, for example, if you look at food prices and food insecurity in the central Sahel region, there was a tremendous spike in food prices as a direct result of the Ukraine conflict, which has led to increased food insecurity in Mali and Burkina Faso and potential food shortages and increases in violent conflict in the coming months. So the impact of that conflict in Ukraine is certainly not restricted to just the Russia and Eurasia region or just to Europe. The consequences are really being felt worldwide and having a significant impact on global peacefulness.
Yeah, speaking of the impact on the economic side, I think we've seen a lot of increase in food prices. I mean, supply chains across the globe were a bit of broken in a way due to this. And then when we narrowed down to sub-Saharan Africa, from the report, I saw that there was a slight fall in peacefulness with conflict-related death and violence against civilians. And the rise in countries, I mean, what you said, Mali, Eswatini, I mean, what do you say are the underlying sort of causes of this deterioration? And what strategies do you think can be employed to promote peace and security in the region?
What I would point out is that you're absolutely right. There were deteriorations in those countries. As we said, so many causes, many reasons for that increase, so the deterioration in peacefulness, so rising food prices, increasing tensions, increased levels of terrorism. But one thing that we did look at in this year's report, we wanted to focus on areas where there had been positive improvements in peace. And so the one area where we found where there'd been sort of a strong regional improvement was in coastal West Africa. So in the central Sahel region, in the tri-border area particularly, you have very high levels of terrorism and conflict. But in the neighboring countries on the coastal West Africa, you actually had improvements in peacefulness in almost every single country there from 2008 to 2023. And if you look at just the terrorism indicator, in 2022, in coastal West Africa, between Morocco and Ghana, there wasn't a single death from terrorism in any country in that region. So although there have been deteriorations in peacefulness in sub-Saharan Africa, it's not all a bad news story. There are also some positive signs and increases in peacefulness as well.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, still looking at the report, I saw countries like Ghana, Mauritius, performed significantly, I mean, much better than even countries like the US when it comes to peace. I mean, what could you say is the key driver for performance of countries like Ghana, Mauritius? I mean, does that in a way relate to the business environment when you compare to the peacefulness of a country?
Yeah, so we've identified sort of 8 key drivers of peacefulness, which we call positive peace. So you're absolutely right. It's things like well-functioning government, low levels of corruption, sound business environment, high levels of education. So for those countries that have been improving in sub-Saharan Africa, they are improving on those areas of positive peace, but there's also an improved security environment. So a better focus on governance, on cooperation between countries in the region. So more African-led peacekeeping operations involving African countries, primarily driving that process, and increased sort of cooperation between police departments across countries as well. So there's number of different factors driving the improvement in those countries.
Let's go a little bit back on sub-Saharan Africa. From the report, the epicenter of terrorism has shifted a little to sub-Saharan Africa, particularly on the Sahel region, as you mentioned before, and that has surpassed the Middle East and North Africa. I mean, what are the key factors driving this particular shift?
A few reasons driving that trend. So one is the aftermath of the conflict in Libya in 2011, and then also the end of the Syrian civil war. And so you have violent extremist groups in those areas where their fighters have moved south down into the central Sahel region. And you have a lot of local conflicts in those areas, which are sometimes ethnic conflicts, sometimes conflicts over resources. And what has happened is that those smaller conflicts involving small violent extremist groups have sort of been rolled up into the larger ideological conflict. So you have a lot of those smaller groups pledging allegiance to Al-Qaeda affiliates or to Islamic State affiliates. And so as a result of that, what was a smaller regional conflict has sort of been caught up in that broader narrative around terrorism and clash of ideologies. And then, of course, there are environmental factors. So conflict between farmers and herders, the increasing impact of ecological threat, climate change, food insecurity. So really, there are so many different drivers of conflict in that region.
Interesting. Speaking of the MENA region, of an improvement in peacefulness, but however, it remains the least peaceful region across. So could you just briefly explain the main drivers of conflict and instability in that region?
Absolutely. So there have been, over the past decade, very high levels of conflict in the Middle East and North Africa. And what we've seen over the past 3 years, so there's been an improvement in peacefulness year on year for the past 3 years. And really, that's, in a sense, a return to baseline. So it's in the post-conflict environment. As those conflicts wind down, you see less conflict deaths. But that, of course, that's not a guarantee of future peacefulness. So the situation on the ground in many of those countries remains tense. There's still a potential for future violence. So, for example, Libya. If you look at Libya, it was one of the countries on the GPI this year, which had the largest improvements in peacefulness. But on the ground, the situation remains volatile. So if you want to see those long-term increases in peacefulness, you really need to see improvement on those pillars of positive peace. So things like well-functioning government, sound business environment, and so on. Without improvements in those areas, there's always the potential for a relapse back into conflict.
I tried checking out the status of Sudan the last few months. I erupted into a conflict, stroke war. What's your view around the peacefulness of that region after the war broke out?
So the situation in Sudan, just as the conflict was starting to escalate, that's sort of exactly around the cutoff period for the data that's included in the Global Peace Index. So the full scope of that conflict and the increase is not fully reflected in the Global Peace Index this year, but it will be reflected in the index next year. However, even having said that, Sudan is one of the least peaceful countries in the world, even before the start of the escalation in violence. So that's certainly a particular area of concern for us and one that we'll be keeping a careful eye on over the coming year.
Looking at the overall GPI, it highlights a significant increase in military expenditure and personnel reduction in many countries, including those affected by conflicts such as Ukraine. How do these trends impact global peace and security? What sort of policy measures do you think can be implemented to achieve, say, a more balanced and peaceful approach?
Absolutely. The key message we would want people to take away from the report this year is that wars are increasingly becoming unwinnable or close to unwinnable. If you look at the history of conflict over the past few decades, you have longer conflicts, more intractable conflicts, you have more parties involved in a conflict, you more often end up in a frozen conflict situation. And then you often have situations where some sort of peace agreement is reached, but then there's a relapse into conflict immediately afterwards. So the message we really want to get across is that we need to be looking at new solutions, new answers to these kinds of conflicts. And there needs to be an increased recognition that most of these problems cannot be solved with violent conflict.
I mean, as we come to the end of this, Thomas, I thought it could touch on, there are interesting stats that I also saw is that 65% of the men aged between 20 to 24 in Ukraine have either fled the country or died in conflict. I mean, the long-term consequence of this is significant. I mean, the loss of a young population. From where you sit, how does this affect the country's prospects when it comes to stability and development?
It's absolutely devastating for Ukraine. One thing I would point out is that with those figures, the majority of those have not died in conflict, they've just left the country. And there's always a chance, depending on what happens over the next few years, that they will return to Ukraine. So many of those young men and women who have fled the country are currently refugees, particularly in Western Europe. So the future of Ukraine and its ability to bounce back from the conflict economically will depend on its ability to have its young people return in the coming years. Because, of course, you're absolutely right. Without that base of young people in the country, both socially and economically, that has a devastating impact.
As we come to the end of this chat, Thomas, with your expertise in peace, governance, business and corruption, what role do you see these factors playing in overall terms observed in the GPI 2023 index? And when you talk to governments and businesses, civil society, how do you encourage them to collaborate to address challenges and promote a more peaceful and safer world?
That's an excellent question. And although it's easy to highlight the areas which need to improve, so you pointed them out exactly, governance, sound business governance, reducing levels of corruption. Of course, the million-dollar question is how to improve in those areas. Our role as a research organization is just to make very clear across a whole range of countries and contexts where these factors are important. So really our role is just to demonstrate and to try and reinforce the message over and over again that the best way to protect against violent conflict, the best way to reduce the chance of violent conflict is to improve levels of governance, improve the business environment. Now, of course, the exact way that that happens and the pathways by which that happens, that's going to depend a lot on context. It's going to vary from region to region and from country to country. So lots of different talented organizations working in that area. Our role is just to point out and make very explicit the link between those factors and conflict.
Thanks, Thomas, for such an insightful conversation. Looking forward to next year's report and looking at what comes out of that.
Thank you so much for your time. It was a pleasure. Thank you for having us.